new perceived marketplace, you are a monopoly and can make monopoly profits. That is the point. One final point I want to drive home. If you offer a service where a customer must do something in order to achieve the result or solve the problem you say you solve, they must be invested. The more invested they are, the more likely they are to achieve the positive result. Therefore, it follows that if you care about your customers, you should get them as invested as humanly possible. Ideally, this means pricing your services or product in such a way that it stings a little when they buy. That sting will force and focus their attention and their investment in your product or service. Those who pay the most attention. And if your customers are more adherent and follow through, and if they achieve better results with your service than your competition, then you are in a very real way providing more value than anyone else. This is how you win. But I know this isn't easy, and it shouldn't be. Your product must deliver. So many wish to shortcut the real work. Do that, and you will fail. In the real world, to have the quote gonads to charge big ticket prices, you must outwork your self-doubt. You must be so confident in your delivery because you have done it so many times that you know that this person will succeed. Experience is what gives you the conviction to ask for someone's entire year's salary as payment. You must believe so deeply in your solution that when you look at yourself in the mirror at night alone, your conviction remains unshakable. So let me bring this section home with my personal experience, my premium price experience. In my first niche consulting business, GymLaunch, I teach owners a better business model. Before productizing my consulting services, I flew out to 33 gyms in 18 months to do full gym turnarounds. We would fly out, fix everything in a gym, and relaunch it in 21 days. We would average an increase in $42,000 in additional sales in 21 days. It was wild. My fee was 100% of the revenue I would bring in. At our peak, we were turning around 8 gyms a month. This quickly became a logistical nightmare. After the wear and tear of living in motels month after month after month, I thought to myself, there has to be a better way to do this. One month, there was a gym we were scheduled to go fly out to, but I simply didn't want to do it. So I told them we were going to cancel the engagement. The gym owner practically threatened me to help him. So I said I would help him, but he would have to do all the work, but I would show him how. Within 30 days, this gym made almost $44,000 in new upfront cash collected, which was 4 times their previous month. As soon as I saw that my process could be duplicated from afar without me having to fly people in, our business exploded. I had found the missing link because my travel schedule was no longer a constraint. We went on to sell 4,000 plus more gyms over the next few years and counting using a done with you rather than done for you model. But back to premium pricing. When I entered the space, low price competitors offered full service marketing solutions for $500 per month, with a single high-priced competitor charging $5,000 for his product. I wanted to be the premium price leader. I wanted to be so expensive that it created a lure around what we were doing. So we came in at 3 times the highest priced player and 32 times more than the lowest priced player. A price of $16,000 for a 16-week done-with-you intensive. Then we upsold 35% of those people into a 3-year $42,000 per year agreement for us to help them grow their gyms. For context, the average gym owner makes $35,280 per year in take-home profits. If that's the average, it means half make even less than that. So for many of them, they were committing to half of their yearly salary or more to buy our program. And I was selling this to grown men as a kid in his 20s, telling them I was going to help them make more money. This was possible because my conviction was stronger than their skepticism. How? Based on a voluntary survey taken at our last full company event, with 158 gyms responding, we found that a GymLaunch gym who has been in our program for 11 months will experience the following average improvements. Top line revenue growth of $239,000 per year. Recurring revenue growth of $160,000 a year. Bottom line growth, aka profit, from $2,943 per month to $8,940 per month. That's 3.1x increase. Average client growth of an additional 67 clients. Churn, aka percentage of clients who leave each month, drops from 10.7% before to 6.8%. Retail sales, an additional $4,400 per month in retail sales after they started working with us. Prices, on average, went from $129 per month to $167 per month in average revenue per gym member. The survey just proved what I already knew. I had complete conviction in our product. I knew it worked. I had outworked my self-doubt. Summary points. What should you take from this? First and foremost, charge a premium. It will allow you to do things no one else can to make your client successful. We were able to charge a premium because we provided more value than anyone else in the industry. In a real way, we were charging only a fraction of what our clients made using our system. This is important. our clients still got a deal. The gap between what they paid, price, and what they got, value, was massive. As a result, the virtuous cycle continued to spin. We charged the most money, we provided the most value, our gyms remained the most competitive, made the most money, always had the latest and best acquisition systems, and had the support to implement them at lightning speed. We made many mistakes along the way, but our pricing model was not one of them. It allowed me the room to make big bets without losing the farm. The truth is that 99% of businesses need to raise their prices to grow, not lower them. Profit is oxygen. It fuels the fire of growth. You need that if you want to reach more people and make a bigger impact. In order to charge so much, though, you must learn to create tremendous value. Let's head there next. Section 3. Value. Create your offer. How to make offers so good, people feel stupid saying no. Chapter 6. Value Offer. The Value Equation. We question all of our beliefs, except for the ones we really believe in, and those we never think to question. Orson Scott Card. I want to be abundantly clear. The goal should be to charge as much money for your products or services as humanly possible. I'm talking heinous amounts of money. That being said, anyone can raise their prices, but only a select few can charge these rates and get people to say yes. From this point forward, you must abandon any notion you have about what's fair. Every enormous company in the world charges you money for things that cost them nothing. It costs pennies for the phone company to add an additional user, except they don't mind charging you hundreds of dollars per month for access. It costs pennies to manufacture pharmaceutical drugs, but they don't mind charging hundreds of dollars per month for it. Media companies charge advertisers a king's ransom for your eyeballs, and it costs them next to nothing to get you to like kitten photos on social media. You need to have a big discrepancy between what something costs you and what you charge for it. It is the only way to become unreasonably wealthy. Many entrepreneurs believe that charging too much is bad. The reality is, yes, you should never charge more than your product is worth, but you should charge far more for your product and services than it costs to fulfill. Think up to 100 times more, not just 2 or 3 times more. And if you provide enough value, it should always still be a steal for the prospect. That is the power of value. It unleashes unlimited pricing and profit power to scale your company. For example, one of my private clients whose company I have equity in our portfolio is in the photography space. Over 2 years implementing the tactics outlined in this book, the owner was able to increase the average ticket from $300 to $1,500. That's a 5x increase. Gasp. Even cooler, they now spend less time per customer and have higher customer satisfaction. The 5x increase in average ticket 38x'd the profit of the business. It went from making $1,000 a week in profit to $38,000 per week in profit and continues to grow. As a result, the company was finally able to continue to scale to multiple locations and provide meaningful work to great employees. And a fun benefit, we were able to donate even more money to children's charities, which is something the owner and I have in common, almost $1 million at the time of this writing. But none of that would have been possible without figuring out what people valued most, tripling down on it, and ruthlessly eliminating everything else. A 5x price increase may seem crazy to you, but clients voted with their dollars that what the company provides now is far better than what it did before. Cracking value opens up the world of unlimited profit, impact, and possibilities. Those who understand value are the ones who will be able to charge the most money for their services. The good news is that there is a repeatable formula that I have created. I've never seen it displayed elsewhere, to help quantify the variables that create value for any offer. I call it the value equation. Once you see it, you can never unsee it. It will operate in your subconscious, running in the background, calling out to you. It's a new lens through which to see the world. The value equation. Dream outcome times perceived likelihood of achievement divided by time delay times effort and sacrifice equals value. Free gift number 4. Value equation bonus tutorial and free downloads. If you want to know how I break down business's core offering into something more valuable, go to acquisitions.com/trainings/offers and select the value equation video to watch a short tutorial. I also included a downloadable checklist. My goal is to gain your trust and deliver value in advance. As such, it's absolutely free. Enjoy. So as you can see, or hear, there are 4 primary drivers to value. 2 of the drivers, which are the top 2 parts of the equation, you will seek to increase. The other 2, on the bottom of the equation, you will seek to decrease. So 1, yay, the dream outcome, our goal is to increase. 2, yay, perceived likelihood of achievement, our goal is to increase. 3, boo, perceived time delay between start and achievement, our goal is to decrease. 4, Boo, perceived effort and sacrifice. Our goal is to decrease. If you notice the questions in the last section that my father asked me, you'll see they corresponded with these pillars. What will I make? Dream outcome. How will I know it's going to happen? Perceived likelihood of achievement. How long will it take? Time delay. What is expected of me? Effort and sacrifice. Get the bottom to zero. In the beginning of my career, I focused all my attention on dream outcomes and the perception of achievement, social proof, third-party edification, etc. In other words, the top side of the equation. That's where beginner marketers make bigger and bigger claims. It's easy and it's lazy. But as time has gone on, I've realized that these larger-than-life claims are the easiest to establish and therefore less unique. After all, anyone can make a promise. The harder and more competitive are the time delay and effort and sacrifice. The best companies in the world focus all their attention on the bottom side of the equation, making things immediate, seamless, and effortless. Apple made the iPhone effortless compared to other phones at the time. Amazon made purchasing a single click of a button and made purchases arrive almost immediately. Maybe by the time you read this, they'll be sending drones to our doors within 60 minutes. Netflix made consuming television immediate and effortless. So, the older I get, the more I have shifted my focus to the, quote, hard stuff, decreasing the bottom side of the equation. And I believe the better you do this, the more you will be rewarded by the marketplace. Final note. The reason this is a division equation and not addition is that I want to convey one key point. If you can make the bottom part of the equation equal to zero, you are golden. No matter how small the top side is, anything divided by zero equals infinity, which is technically undefined for math nerds. In other words, if you can reduce your prospect's true time delay to receiving value to zero, aka you realize your immediate dream outcome and your effort and sacrifice is zero, you have an infinitely valuable product. If you accomplish this, you win the game. Given this postulate, a prospect would, in theory, purchase something from you, and the moment their credit card was run, it would immediately become their reality. That is infinite value. Imagine clicking the purchase button on a weight loss product and instantly seeing your stomach turn into a six-pack. Or imagine hiring a marketing firm, and as soon as you sign your document, your phone begins to ring with new, highly qualified prospects. How valuable would these products or services be? Infinitely valuable. And that's the point. I don't know if we entrepreneurs will ever get there, but that is the hypothetical limit we should all strive towards, and why I structured the equation this way. Perception is reality. Perception is reality. It's not about how much you increase your prospect's likelihood of success, or decrease the time delay to achievement, or decrease their effort and sacrifice. That in and of itself is not valuable. Many times, they will have no idea. The Grand Slam offer only becomes valuable once the prospect perceives the increase in likelihood of achievement, perceives the decrease in time delay, and perceives the decrease in effort and sacrifice. A prime example of this happened on the London Tunnel System. The biggest increase in rider satisfaction, aka value, was never from faster trains to decrease wait times. Instead, it was from a simple dotted map that showed them when the next train was coming and how long they had to wait. The dotted map, which only cost a few million dollars, decreased the rider's perception of time delay and sacrifice, aka being bored waiting, more than actually making the trains faster, which cost billions of dollars to do. Isn't that cool? This is how we need to think about our products. Pro tip, logical versus psychological solutions. Most people naturally try and solve problems using logical solutions, but the logical solutions have already been tried. Because they're logical, it's what everyone would try and do. As business owners and entrepreneurs, I increasingly approach problems to find psychological solutions rather than logical ones. Because if there were a logical solution, it probably would have already been solved, thereby eliminating the problem. All that remains are the psychological problems. Example inspired by Rory Sutherland, CMO of Ogilvy Advertising. Any fool can sell a product by offering it for a discount. It takes great marketing to sell the same product for a premium. Logical solution, make trains faster to increase satisfaction. Psychological solution, decrease the pain of waiting by adding a dotted map. Psychological solution, pay models to be the hostesses on the trip. People would wish it took longer to get to their destination. Logical solution, make elevator faster. Psychological solution, add floor-to-ceiling mirrors so people are distracted staring at themselves and forget how long they were on the elevator. Logical solution, make it cheaper. Psychological solution, make fewer of them and raise the price, which would cause more people to want it. Often, most logical solutions have been tried and failed. At this point in history, we must give the psychological solutions a shot to solve problems. As such, as business owners, it's up to us to communicate these value drivers with clarity to increase the prospect's perception of these realities. The extent to which you answer these questions in the mind of your prospect will determine the value you are creating. Only then will we truly be able to realize the actual value of our product to the marketplace and, by extension, the egregious prices we wish to charge. It's difficult to separate four value drivers from one another, as most vehicles combine many of these elements together, but I will do my best to isolate and clearly explain each one below. Number one, dream outcome. Our goal, increase. People have deep, unchanging desires. This is what marriages are lost over, wars are fought over, and people willingly die for. Our goal is not to create desire. Our goal is simply to channel that desire through our offer and monetization vehicle. The dream outcome is the expression of that feeling and experiences the prospect has envisioned in their mind. It's the gap between their current reality and their dreams. Our goal is to accurately depict that dream back to them so they feel understood and explain how our vehicle will get them there. The dream outcome is simple. It's the getting there where the value gets enhanced or detracted. People generally, and our clients specifically, want to be perceived as beautiful, to be respected, to be perceived as powerful, to be loved, to increase their status. These are all powerful drivers. But multiple vehicles may accomplish the same thing. Take the desire to be perceived as beautiful, for example. There are a lot of things that touch on this desire. Makeup, anti-aging creams or serums, supplements, shapewear, plastic surgery, fitness. All of these vehicles channel the desire to be perceived as beautiful. And if we further unpack the idea of a desire to be beautiful, we see that it may be a surface-level declaration of a deeper desire to achieve higher status in one social group. The dream outcome value driver is most prominently used when comparing the relative value between two different desires being satisfied. In general, the dream outcome that most directly increases a prospect's status will be the one they value the most. As such, a prospect may value that entire category of vehicles that satisfy one desire more than another category that satisfies a different desire. For many men, making money is more important than being handsome. Why? Because money drives status for men more than being handsome does. So in general, they will value all offers that make them money more than offers that help them look good. I once heard Russell Brunson tell a story about this concept. He explained how his wife, Colette, at first hearing the status concept, rejected it. She claimed she wasn't driven by status and would never want a Lamborghini. Instead, she favored her minivan. But after talking further, she revealed it was because driving a Lamborghini would decrease her status amongst her mom friends, while driving a minivan would show that she was a good mom, increase in status. So it's not about the money. It's about the status, the perceived increase or decrease in relative standing when compared to others socially or professionally. Talk in terms of things your prospect believes will increase their status, and you'll have your prospects drooling. Pro tip, frame benefits in terms of status gained from the viewpoint of others. When writing copy, you can make it that much more powerful by talking about how other people will perceive the prospect's achievement. Connect the dots for them. Example, if you buy this golf club, your drive will increase by 40 yards. Your golf buddies' jaws will drop when they see your ball soar 40 yards past theirs. They will ask you what's changed. Only you will know. That being said, when comparing two products or services that satisfy the same desire, the value from the dream outcomes will cancel out, since they are the same. It will be the other three variables that drive the difference in perceived value and ultimately price. For example, if we had two products or services that both help make someone beautiful, it will be the likelihood of achievement, time delay, and effort required that will differentiate the perceived value of each offer. Simply put, if two things make someone beautiful, what makes one worth $50,000 and another worth $5? Answer, the extent of the other three value variables. Number two, perceived likelihood of achievement. Our goal, increase. This was the last of the variables that I added when trying to think through this framework a few years ago. I just felt like something was missing with only the other three. Then I realized people pay for certainty. They value certainty. I call this the perceived likelihood of achievement. In other words, how likely do I believe that it is that I will achieve the result that I am looking for if I make this purchase? For example, how much would you pay to be a plastic surgeon's 10,000th patient versus their first? If you're a normal, sane person, a lot more. I mean, heck, you might even ask them to pay you if you're their first patient ever. So you can see even from this simple example that while the service you're receiving is technically the same, the only thing that changes is your perceived likelihood of getting what you want. Both surgeons take the same amount of time to do the surgery. If anything, the guy who has done it 10,000 times would likely get it done faster and still charge more. The more experienced surgeon has a track record of achieving a result, which incentivizes their desirability. People value this perceived likelihood of achievement. Increasing a prospect's conviction that your offer will actually work for them will make your offer that much more valuable, even though the work remains the same on your end. So to increase value with all offers, we must communicate perceived likelihood of achievement through our messaging, proof, what we choose to include or exclude in our offer, and our guarantees. More on this later. Number 3, time delay. Our goal, increase. Time delay is the time between a client buying and receiving the promised benefit. The shorter the distance between when they make the purchase and when they receive value / the outcome, the more valuable your service or product is. There are two elements to this driver of value, long-term outcome and short-term experience. Many times, there are short-term experiences that occur en route to the long-term outcomes. They happen along the way and provide value. It's good to understand both. The thing people buy is the long-term value, aka the dream outcome. But the thing that makes them stay long enough to get it is the short-term experience. These are the little milestone a prospect sees along the way that shows them they are on the right path. We try and tie as many of these as possible into any service we offer. We want clients to have a big emotional win early, as close as possible to their purchase. This gives them the emotional buy-in and the momentum to see it through to their ultimate goal. For example, it takes a while to add an extra $239,000 per year to a gym, but that's what they're buying. So once they have purchased, we need to create emotional wins fast. One of the ways we do this is to get their ads live and get them to close their first $2,000 sale within their first 7 days. By doing this, their decision to work with us is reinforced and they immediately trust us more. This makes them more likely to follow the rest of our systems and get to their ultimate destination. Pro tip, fast wins. Always try and incorporate short-term immediate wins for a client. Be creative. They just need to know that they're on the right path and they made the right decision trusting you and your business. Let me give you another example. If I sell someone a bikini body, their time delay to realize that outcome may be 12 months or even longer. Along the way, though, as they change their bodies, they may experience higher sex drive, more energy, and an increased community of friends. They aren't initially buying those things, but those things may become short-term benefits that keep them in the game long enough to achieve their ultimate outcome. They buy the dream, but they stay for the benefits they discover along the way. The faster and more clearly you can demonstrate those benefits, the more valuable your service will be. For a weight loss customer, we would get them to meet someone else so they immediately had some social benefits from the program. And we usually give them a more aggressive diet in the beginning. Why? Because we wanted them to have a big, fast emotional win so we could get them to commit to the long term. This is also backed by science. People who experience a victory early on are more likely to continue with something than those who do not. That being said, having to wait 12 to 24 months to get you what you want is a long time when you can do liposuction and be done in an afternoon. This just shows one of the reasons people pay $25,000 for a liposuction with a tummy tuck, while people will barely pay $100 a month to join a bootcamp. But that's not the only reason, is it? That leads me to the last driver of value, effort and sacrifice. Pro tip, fast beats free. The only thing that beats free is fast. People will pay for speed. Many companies have entered free spaces and done exceedingly well with a speed-first strategy. A few notable companies, the MVD versus the DMV. Wait in line forever or pay $50. You can skip the line and get your license renewed privately. FedEx versus USPS, when it absolutely positively has to be there overnight. Spotify versus slow free music. Uber versus walking. Fast beats free. Many will always be willing to pay price for the value of speed. So if you find yourself in a market competing against free, double down on speed. Number 4, effort and sacrifice. Our goal, decrease. This is what it costs people in ancillary costs, aka other costs accrued along the way. These can be both tangible and intangible. Using the fitness liposuction example, let's look at the difference in effort and sacrifice. Fitness effort and sacrifice. Wake up 1 to 2 hours earlier in the morning, 5 to 10 hours per week of time lost, stop eating the foods you love, constant hunger, physical soreness, feelings of embarrassment and not knowing how to exercise, risk of injury, literal nausea working out, meal prepping, new groceries, more expensive groceries, new clothing, fear of gaining it back after all this effort, aka impermanence, etc. Liposuction effort and sacrifice. Fall asleep, wake up thin, guaranteed, be sore for 2 to 4 weeks. Massive difference, right? In fact, in looking at the marketing of plastic surgeons, these are the exact pain points they hit on when they say things like, tired of wasting countless hours in the gym, tired of diets that just don't work. This is why when you sell fitness, you have to spend an hour arm wrestling a client to give over 1/10 or 1/100th of the amount of money they pay for surgery. There's just not a lot of perceived value because the perceived likelihood of achievement, the time delay to achievement, and the effort and sacrifice are so high. So even though the outcome is the same, the value of the vehicles are dramatically different, hence the difference in price. Decreasing the effort and sacrifice, or at least the perceived effort and sacrifice, can massively boost the appeal of your offer. In an ideal world, a prospect would want to simply say yes and have their dream outcome happen with no more effort on their behalf. This is why done-for-you services are almost always more expensive than do-it-yourself, because a person doesn't have to do all the effort and sacrifice. There's also a component of perceived likelihood of achievement difference as well. People believe that if an expert does it, then they will be more likely to achieve the outcome than if they try on their own. My hope is that you now have a foundational understanding of the components of value, and how the interplay between each of the components creates or detracts from the value someone might be willing to pay. Putting it all together. As I said earlier, these elements of value don't happen in a vacuum. They happen together, in combination. So let's look at a few examples that utilize all four components of value at once. In an effort to quantify the value, I'll rate them on a binary scale of 0 or 1. 1 being value achieved, 0 being missing. Then I will add all four together to give you a relative value rating of a type of service. Our goal as marketers and business owners is to increase the value of the dream outcome and its perceived likelihood of achievement, while decreasing the time delay of achievement and the effort and sacrifice one has to put in to get there. To start, I will do a side-by-side comparison of two vehicles with identical dream outcomes, meditation and Xanax. Both offer the buyer relaxation, decreased anxiety, and feelings of well-being. I will demonstrate how the other three variables dramatically shift the value of delivering that dream outcome and ultimately the price. Meditation versus Xanax. So I'm going to read the chart below to compare relative scores on each of the four value drivers. Meditation, dream outcome, relaxation, decreased anxiety, feelings of well-being. Score, 1 out of 1. Perceived likelihood of achievement, low, since most people get distracted and don't actually think they'll follow through with daily meditation. Score, 0 out of 1. Time delay. Long time to yield long-term results. Some immediate benefits after 10 to 20 minutes, assuming you don't get frustrated. Score, 0.5 out of 1. Effort and sacrifice. Physical discomfort, numb body limbs often, mental discomfort, feeling like you are failing constantly. Time sacrifice. You have to set aside time every day to do this. Score, 0 out of 1. Overall value score for meditation, low, 1.5 out of 4. Now let's look at Xanax. Dream outcome, same as meditation. Relaxation, decreased anxiety, feelings of well-being. Score, 1 out of 1. Perceived likelihood of achievement, high, since most people are confident that if they take the pill, it will make them feel more relaxed. Score, 1 out of 1. Time delay, 15 minutes for effects to be felt. Score, 1 out of 1. Effort and sacrifice, swallowing a pill. Score, 1 out of 1. Overall value score, high, 4 out of 4. And that is why Xanax is a multi-billion dollar product, while I know of almost no multi-billion dollar meditation businesses. Value. I'm not here to argue about whether meditation is better than Xanax. Obviously it is. But that doesn't mean it's perceived as more valuable. This is also the reason that supplement industry, $123 billion, according to Grandview Research, is twice the size of the health club industry, $62 billion, according to HRSA. They both accomplish the same perceived objectives, being healthy, losing weight, looking good, increasing energy, etc. But one is perceived as more valuable because it has lower costs. People are more willing to pay $200 for supplements than they are for a $29 per month membership. Taking a pill or drinking a shake is so much faster and easier than going to the gym every day, hence valued. Crazy world we live in. And you can either sit there and make complain posts about how people ought to be a certain way, or you can take advantage of the way people are and capitalize. This book is for those people who want to be victors, not victims of circumstance. You can either be right or you can be rich. This book is for getting rich. If that bothers you, you can put this down and go back to arguing against human nature. Hint, you're not going to change it. Now, that being said, knowing what people value versus what is good for them is key. It means you can find ways to monetize the things that people value in order to give them what they really need. Win-win. You can make your dent in the universe while making a profit. Chapter 7. Free Goodwill. He who said money can't buy happiness hasn't given enough away. Source unknown. People who help others with zero expectation experience higher levels of fulfillment, live longer, and make more money. I'd like to create the opportunity to deliver this value to you during your reading or listening experience. In order to do so, I have a simple question for you. Would you help someone you've never met if it didn't cost you money, but you never got credit for it? If so, I have an ask to make on behalf of someone you do not know, and likely never will. They are just like you, or like you were a few years ago, less experienced, full of desire to help the world, seeking information but unsure where to look. This is where you come in. The only way for us at acquisition.com to accomplish our mission of helping entrepreneurs is first by reaching them. And most people do, in fact, judge a book by its cover, and its reviews. If you have found this book valuable thus far, would you please take a brief moment right now and leave an honest review of the book and its contents? It will cost you $0 and less than 60 seconds. Your review will help one more entrepreneur support his or her family, one more employee find work they find meaningful, one more client experience a transformation they otherwise would not have encountered, one more life change for the better. To make that happen, all you have to do is, and this takes less than 60 seconds, leave a review. If you're on Audible, hit the three dots on the top right of your device, click and rate and review, and then leave a few sentences about the book with a star rating. If for some reason they have changed the functionality, you can go to the book page of Amazon or wherever you purchase this and leave a review right on the page. P.S. If you feel good about helping a faceless entrepreneur, you are my kind of people. I'm that much more excited to help you crush it in the coming chapters. You'll love the tactics I'm about to go over. P.P.S. Life hack. If you introduce something valuable to someone, they associate that value with you. If you'd like goodwill directly from another entrepreneur, send this book their way. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Now back to our regularly scheduled programming. Your biggest fan, Alex. Chapter 8. Value Offer. The Thought Process. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Thomas H. Palmer. Teacher's Manual. I want to do an exercise with you right now. I want to show you the difference between convergent and divergent problem solving. Why? So that you can actually create the Grand Slam offer that will become the cornerstone of your business. Convergent and divergent thinking. In simple terms, convergent problem solving is where you take lots of variables, all known, with unchanging conditions, and converge on a singular answer. Think math. Example, you have three salespeople who can each take 100 calls per month. It takes four calls to create one sale, including no-shows. You need to get to 110 sales. How many salespeople must you hire? Deduced information. One salesperson equals 100 calls. Four calls equal one close. 100 calls divided by 4 calls per close equals 25 closes per 100 calls. 25 closes per rep. Goal, 110 sales total divided by 25 sales per rep equals 4.4. Since you can't hire 4.4 reps, you decide you must have 5. Answer, and since you have 3, you hire 2 more. Math problems are convergent. There are a lot of variables and a single answer. We are taught all our lives in school to think this way. That's because it's easy to grade. But life will pay you for your ability to solve problems using a divergent thought process. In other words, think of many solutions to a single problem. Not only that, convergent answers are binary. They're either right or wrong. With divergent thinking, you can have multiple right answers, and one answer that is way more right than the others. Cool, right? Here's what life presents us for divergent thinking. Multiple variables, known and unknown, dynamic conditions, multiple answers. As such, I want to do an exercise with you right now that will engage the part of your brain that you will need to use in order to make something magical. I call it the brick exercise. Don't worry, it will take 120 seconds. The brick exercise. Right now, I want you to set a timer on your phone for 120 seconds. What you need to do, think of a brick. Write down as many different uses of a brick as you can possibly think of. How many different ways could a brick be used in life to provide value? Ready? Go. It's okay to write in the book or write on a notepad on the side. All right, stop. Now, before I show you my list, did you consider the following? How big is the brick? A tab of gum? 3 to 5 by 8? 2 to 1 by 4? Standard? 2 feet by 2 feet by 6 feet? What's the brick made of? Plastic, gold, clay, wood, metal? How's the brick shaped? Does it have holes in it? Does it have divots for interlocking? Now, as you think about that, can you think of even more uses for the brick than you probably wrote down? Well, here's my list. Paperweight, doorstep, building things, home for a fish in a fishbowl, plant holder with dirt holes, hold brick, as a trophy, painted brick, rustic decoration, to break a window, make a mural, tiny bricks painted, a weight for resistance training, a wedge under an uneven platform, pen holder for hold brick, children's toy, Lego bricks, flotation device, plastic brick, payment for goods, gold brick, stabilizer for leaning against something, retainer of value, holder for flagpole, hold brick, a seat, jumbo brick. Every offer has building blocks, the pieces that when combined make an offer irresistible. Our goal is to use a divergent thought process to think of as many easy ways to combine these elements to provide value. So if I were selling a brick, I would find out what my customer's desire was, and then devise how many ways I would create value with my brick. Now let's do it for real. Chapter 9, Value Offer. Creating Your Grand Slam Offer, Part 1, Problems and Solutions. ABC, easy as 1, 2, 3, ah, simple as Do, Re, Mi. Michael Jackson, ABC. When I started my gym, I struggled. I wanted so deeply to be successful, prove my dad wrong about my decision to start my own business, and prove to myself that I was worth something. But try as I did, I couldn't even sell people into a $99 a month bootcamp. People would say, LA Fitness is $29 a month. This is expensive. I even tried getting people to start for free. They said they wouldn't bother because $99 a month afterwards was still too much, and they didn't want to start something they couldn't continue with. It's a new level of frustration when you can't even give your services away for free to people. I felt worthless, and I didn't know what to do. Thankfully, during this time, I was in groups with other gym owners, and I started hearing about marketers and books. I devoured everything I could, and as soon as I stumbled on Dan Kennedy's books, I was hooked. In his books, he talked about making irresistible offers. Again, this theme of making an offer so good, people would feel stupid to say no, kept reappearing. But this time, remembering what TJ had told me, I had decided to go all in on this concept rather than just do what everyone else was doing. But how? Everyone else was selling $99 per month bootcamps. How was I going to compete? So I decided to look at what we did differently. I thought, what do they really want? No one wants a membership. They want to lose weight. Step 1. Identify a dream outcome. I had heard of weight loss challenges, so I started there. Lose 20 pounds in 6 weeks. Big dream outcome, lose 20 pounds, with a decreased time delay, 6 weeks. Note, I wasn't selling my membership anymore. I wasn't selling the plane flight, I was selling the solution. When you are thinking about your dream outcome, it has to be them arriving at their destination and what they would like to experience. Step 2, list problems. Next, I wrote down all the things people struggled with and their limiting thoughts around them. When listing out problems, think about what happens immediately before and immediately after someone uses your product or service. What's the next thing they need help with? These are the problems. Think about it in insane detail. If you do, you will create a more valuable and compelling offer as you'll continually be answering people's next problem as they manifest. So, let's go ahead and list out the problems from a prospect's perspective as you think about them. What points of friction exist for them? I like to think about it in sequence that the customer will experience each of these obstacles. Again, channel insane detail. The more problems, the better. Example problems list, weight loss. The first thing they must do, buying healthy food, grocery shopping. Problems. 1, buying healthy food is hard, confusing, and I won't like it. 2, buying healthy food will take too much time. 3, buying healthy food is expensive. 4, I will not be able to cook healthy food forever. My family needs will get in the way. If I travel, I won't know what to buy. Next thing they must do, cook healthy food. 1, cooking healthy food is hard and confusing. I won't like it and I will suck at it. 2, cooking healthy food will take too much time. 3, cooking healthy food is expensive. It's not worth it. 4, I will not be able to cook healthy food forever. My family's needs will get in my way. And if I travel, I won't know how to cook healthy. Next thing they must do, eat healthy food. Next thing they must do, exercise regularly, etc. Now we're going full circle here. Each of the above problems has 4 negative elements, and you guessed it, each aligns with the 4 value drivers as well. Dream outcome, perceived likelihood of achievement, time delay, effort, and sacrifice. 1. Dream outcome, this will not be financially worth it. 2. Likelihood of achievement, it won't work for me specifically, I won't be able to stick with it, external factors will get in my way. This is the most unique and service-specific of the problem buckets. 3. Effort and sacrifice, this will be too hard, confusing, I won't like it, I will suck at it. 4. Time. This will take too much time to do. I'm too busy to do this. It will take too long to work. It will not be convenient for me. Now go ahead and list out all problems your prospect has. Don't let these buckets, which are just meant to help your brain get going, constrain you. If it's easier for you, just list out everything you can possibly think of. What I showed here isn't just 4 problems, though. We have 16 core problems with 2 to 4 sub-problems underneath. So 32 to 64 problems total. Yowza. No wonder most people don't achieve their goals. Do not get overwhelmed. This is the best news ever. The more problems you can think of, the more problems you get to solve. So, to recap, just list out each core thing that someone has to do. Then think of all the reasons they wouldn't be able to do it or keep doing it using the 4 value drivers as a guide. Now we go to the fun part, turning problems into solutions. Now that we have our dream outcome and all the obstacles that will get in someone's way, it's time to define our solutions and list them out. Creating the solutions list has 2 steps. First, we are going to transform our problems into solutions. Second, we're going to name these solutions. That's it. So let's take a look at our list of problems from earlier. What we're going to do is simply turn them into solutions by thinking, what would I need to show someone to solve this problem? Then we're going to reverse each element of the obstacle into solution-oriented language. This is copywriting 101. It's beyond the scope of this book to get into, but simply adding how to, then reversing the problem, will give most people new to this process a great place to start. For our purposes, we are giving ourselves a checklist of exactly what we are going to do for our prospects and what we are going to solve for them. Once we have our list of solutions, we will operationalize how we are actually going to solve these problems, aka create value in the next step. And I want to be 100% clear, you will solve every problem. We'll explore how together in the next step. Problem, solution. Problem, buying healthy food, grocery shopping. It's hard, confusing, I won't like it, I will suck at it, becomes how to make buying healthy food easy and enjoyable so that anyone can do it, especially moms. Buying healthy food takes too much time. How to buy healthy food quickly. Buying healthy food is expensive. How to buy healthy food for less than your current grocery bill. Buying healthy food is unsustainable. How to make buying healthy food take less effort than buying unhealthy food. Buying healthy food is now my priority. My family's needs will get in the way. How to buy healthy food for you and your family at the same time. Buying healthy food is undoable if I travel. I won't know what to get. How to get healthy food when you are traveling. Problem. Cooking healthy food. Is hard, confusing, I won't like it, and I will suck at it. Turns into how anyone can enjoy cooking healthy meals easily. Cooking healthy food will take too much time. How to cook meals in under 5 minutes. Cooking healthy food is expensive and it's not worth it. How eating healthy is actually cheaper than unhealthy food. Cooking healthy food is unsustainable. How to make eating healthy last forever. Cooking healthy food is not my priority. My family's needs will get in the way. How to cook healthy food despite your family's concerns. Cooking healthy food is undoable. If I travel, I won't know how to cook healthy, how to travel and still cook healthy. Problem, eating healthy food. It's hard, confusing, etc. How to eat delicious food without following complicated systems. Problem, exercising regularly. It's hard, confusing, etc. Easy to follow exercise system that everyone enjoys. Okay, oof. That was a lot of problems and a lot of intuitive solutions courtesy of divergent thinking. You'll also notice that a lot of them are repetitive, and that's totally normal. The value drivers are the four core reasons. Our problems always relate to those drivers, and our solutions provide the needed answer to give a prospect permission to purchase. What's even crazier is that if even only one of these needs is missing in a solution, it can cause someone not to buy. You would be amazed at the reasons people do not buy, so don't limit yourself here. Brooke Castillo is a friend of mine who runs an enormous life coaching business. To give you a different take on the problem solutions list, Brooke sent me her list as she was going through this book to make a Grand Slam offer for a 90-day relationship course. Take a look to see this process through a totally different lens. The main takeaway, though, don't be fancy. Just get all the problems down, then turn them into solutions. Regardless of whether the offer you create is around fitness, like the example, a relationship course, like Brooke, or something wildly different, like earaches, we now know what we need to do. Step four is the how, and how to do it without breaking the bank. Free gift number five, bonus tutorial. Offer Creation Part 1. If you want to walk through the process with me live, go to acquisition.com/offers, then select Offer Creation Part 1 to watch a short video tutorial with yours truly. As always, it's absolutely free. I also have a free offer creation checklist for you that you can swipe and immediately deploy in your business. Enjoy. Now I will read Brooke's list that she gave and she sent to me, which you probably can't see because you're listening to this. Dream outcome, amazing, loving relationship in 90 days. Problems. No good options. No one's attractive. No one's available. Boring. No chemistry. Poor communication. Not hot enough. Sex isn't good. No intellectual stimulation. Not enough effort in the relationship. No time. Insecurity. Needs aren't being met. Too many unmet expectations. Acting crazy emotional. Relationship is dull. Want different things. Not good at relationships. Too much pressure. Moves too slow. Fizzles out fast. Sexual incompatibility. Solutions list. How to get a list of prospective partners chosen in 90 days. How to be attracted to your chosen partner. How to feel available to your partner. How to make sure 90 days is exciting and never boring. How to create chemistry like you've never known. How to communicate in sexy, fun, meaningful ways. How to make the relationship hot by being hot. How to have great sex for 90 days. How to create intellectual stimulation. How to put the effort in the relationship for max return. How to make time for hourly dopamine love hits, etc. Chapter 10, Value Offer, Creating Your Grand Slam Offer Part 2, Trim and Stack. Cut, cut, cut. Friends to Rachel Green in Friends. I divided this chapter into two parts because it's the media section in the book. It's also the most important. Without a valuable product or service, the rest of the book won't be as actionable. We just covered all the problems we're going to solve. The second half of making your offer is breaking down tactically what we are going to do or provide for our client. In theory, we'd all love to fly out and live with our customers to fix their problems. In reality, that wouldn't make a very scalable solution. We need our offer to be incredibly attractive and profitable. That being said, if this is your first Grand Slam offer, it's important to over-deliver like crazy. Maybe flying out isn't such a bad idea in the beginning. Make some sales, then think about how to make it easier for your clients. You want them to think to themselves, "I get all this for only that?" In essence, you want them to perceive tremendous value. Everyone buys bargains. Some people just buy $100,000 things for only $10,000. That's where we want to live. High prices, but a steal for the value, like hopefully this book has been so far. Sales to fulfillment continuum. Something that is easy to sell is typically hard to fulfill. Most things that are hard to sell are typically easy to fulfill. In order to best absorb the notions of trimming and stacking, we need a mental reframe. Enter the sales to fulfillment continuum. Whenever you are building a business, you have a continuum between ease of fulfillment and ease of sales. If you lower what you have to do, it increases how hard your product or service is to sell. If you do as much as possible, it makes your product or service easy to sell but hard to fulfill because there's more demand on your time investment. The trick and ultimate goal is to find the sweet spot where you sell something very well that's also easy to fulfill. I have lived by the mantra, create flow, monetize flow, then add friction. This means I generate demand first, then with my offer, I get them to say yes. Once I have people saying yes, then and only then will I add friction in my marketing or decide to offer less for the same price. Practicality drives this practice. If you can't get demand flowing in, then you have no idea whether what you have is good. I'd rather do more for every customer and have cash flow coming in than optimize my business but have zero cash flow coming in after and have zero idea about what I needed to adjust to better serve my customers. Here's a perfect example to drive this home. When I started Gym Launch, gym owners reached out asking for help. They needed so much help, I didn't know where to start. But I wanted to make sure they got more than what they paid me. So here's what I ended up doing to fill their gyms. I would fly out to their gym for 21 days, spend my own money on hotels, car rentals, eating out, advertising, generate the leads, work the leads, then sell for them. I would even do the first onboarding meeting with the clients to get them started. In short, I did everything. I took on all the risk. They only had to put $500 down to reserve their date, which I made refundable at the end of their launch. So they had zero financial risk, zero time risk, zero effort, and the deal was, I got to keep all the upfront cash collected from selling their services, and they got all the clients for free. You can imagine how this was a pretty compelling offer. On my own, I was able to sell about $100,000 per month in cash upfront for myself. So these deals were very lucrative for me. Over time, I scaled that to a team of 8 guys selling a month. But this began to wear on me and the team. It was at that point that I realized that if I were to simply teach them how to do what I did, I would charge maybe a third of what I would normally make, but I would be able to help hundreds of gyms a month instead of 8. And I could do it all while sleeping in my own bed every night. My promise was fundamentally the same. I will fill your gym in 30 days. It was simply the how and the what I did that changed. The how and the what is what we are breaking apart. When talking to business owners about their model, I tell them to create cash flow by over-delivering like crazy at first. Then use the cash flow to fix your operations and make your business more efficient. This revision process can be pretty seamless. You may not even have to change what you offer. You may just end up creating systems that create the same value for the customer but cost you significantly fewer resources. Ultimately, this is how businesses beat one another. Understanding this will be important as you scale your business. Now that we've established the importance of the fulcrum and how to approach the sales to fulfillment balance at the outset, let's cover the last two steps of creating our Grand Slam offer. To recap quickly, remember that we've covered identifying dream outcomes, step 1, listing problems, step 2, and determining solutions, step 3. Step 4, create your solutions delivery vehicle, the how. The next step is thinking about all the things you could do to solve each of these problems you've identified. This is the most important step in the process. This is what you're going to deliver. This is what you're going to do or provide in exchange for money. For the purposes of keeping creativity high, divergent thinking, think about anything you could possibly do. Think of all the things that might enhance the value of your offer. So much, though, that it would be stupid to say no. What could you do that someone would immediately say, "All that? Seriously? Yes, I'm in." Doing this exercise will make your job of selling so much easier. Even if you come up with something you're not actually willing to do, it's okay. The goal here is to push your limits and jog your brain into thinking of a different version of the solution you'd normally default to. This is where you get to flex your entrepreneurial creativity. Remember, you only need to do this once, literally one time, for a product that may last years. This is high-value, high-leverage work. You ultimately get paid for thinking, you got this. This should be fun. Go ahead and list out all your possibilities now. Then I'll take you through my example. I'll just use the buying food problem from earlier as an example. I like to group things by how many people I'm going to deliver this thing to at once. My list is below. At the bottom, I've given you my, quote, cheat codes, end quote, for how to think through this to get even more creative. Problem. Buying healthy food is hard, confusing, and I won't like it. If I wanted to provide a one-on-one solution, I might offer A, an in-person grocery shopping experience where I take clients to the store and teach them how to shop. B, personalized grocery list where I teach them how to make their own list. C, full-service shopping where I buy their food for them. We're talking 100% done for them. D, in-person orientation, not at the store, where I teach them what to get. E, tech support while shopping, where I help them if they get stuck. F, phone call while grocery shopping, where I plan to call them when they go shopping to provide direction and support in real time. If I wanted to provide a small group solution, I might offer A, an in-person grocery shopping, where I meet a bunch of people and take them all shopping for themselves. B, personalized grocery list, where I teach a bunch of people how to make their weekly lists. And I could do this one time or every week if I wanted to. C, buy their food for them, where I purchase their groceries and deliver them as well. D, in-person orientation, where I teach a small group off-site what to do, just not at the store. If I wanted to provide a one-to-many solution, I might offer a live grocery store tour, where I might stream me going through the grocery store for all my new customers and let them ask questions live. B, a recorded grocery store tour, where I might shop once, record it, and then give it as a reference point from that point onwards for my clients to watch on their own. C, a do-it-yourself grocery calculator, where I create a shareable tool or show them how to use a tool to calculate their grocery list every week. D, predetermined lists, where each customer plan comes with its own grocery list for each week. I could make this ahead of time so they have it. Then they could use it on their own time. E, grocery buddy system, where I could pair each customer with another, which takes no time, and lets them go shopping together. F, pre-made Instacart grocery carts for delivery, where I could pre-make Instacart lists so clients could have their groceries delivered to their doorstep with one click. As you see, the list can really go on and on here. This is just to illustrate the many ways to solve a single problem. Now do this for all the perceived problems that your clients encounter before, after, and during their experience with your product or service. You should have a monster list by the end of this. Product delivery cheat codes. What's that? You're having trouble being creative? I'm going to give you the cheat codes right now, kind of like I did with the brick example. Like the brick could be gold or plastic or have holes in it or be a Lego, etc. Here are my cheat codes for product, variation, and enhancement, and a visual to break down the process for you from my consulting deck for my private portfolio companies. Delivery cube. A, what level of personal attention do I want to provide? One-on-one, small group, one-to-many. B, what level of effort is expected from them? Do it themselves, figure out how to do it on their own, or do it with them, done with you, you teach them how to do it, or done for you, done for them, you do it for them. C, if doing something live, what environment or medium do I want to deliver it in? In person, phone support, email support, text support, Zoom support, chat support? D, if doing a recording, how do I want them to consume it? Audio, visual, written? E, how quickly do we want to reply? On what days, during what hours? 24/7, 9 to 5, within 5 minutes, within an hour, 24 hours a day? How do I want to support? F, 10x to 1/10th test. If my customers paid me 10 times my price, or $100,000, what would I provide? If they paid me 1/10th of my price, and I had to make my product more valuable than it already is, how would I do that? How could I still make them successful for 1/10th the price? Stretch your mind in either direction, and you'll come up with wildly different solutions. In other words, how could I actually deliver on these solutions I am claiming I will provide? Do this for each problem, because solutions from one problem will give you ideas for others you wouldn't normally have considered. Remember, it's important that you solve every problem. I can't tell you the amount of times one single item becomes the reason someone doesn't buy. Anecdote: why we must solve every perceived problem. When I started selling weight loss, I insisted that folks prepare all their food at home. I found it too difficult to help clients lose weight when they ate out because they always blew their diets. Rather than solve the problem, I insisted they do it my way, or not at all. As a result, I lost many sales. One month, I really needed to make some sales to pay rent. My next sale walked in the door. It was a business exec looking to lose weight. As we got into the sales presentation, she told me the program wouldn't work for her because she went out to eat for lunch every day. Normally, I would have lost the sale. I was a stickler for making people not eat out, but I really needed the money. Refusing to lose the sale because of this one thing, I conceded. I'll make you an eating out guide for when you go to restaurants so you can eat out 100% of the time and still hit your goal. How does that sound? She agreed, and I closed the sale. I took the time to make an eating out guide for her. But from that point going forward, whenever someone said, "But what about eating out?" I had the solution. Over time, I continued solving obstacles with templates and trainings until there were no more one things to prevent my sales. This lesson has stuck with me to this day. Don't get romantic about how you want to solve the problem. Find a way to solve every problem a prospect presents with. When you do that, you make an offer that's so good, people just can't say no. And that's what we're building here. Note, you must resolve every obstacle a buyer believes they will have to convert the highest amount of people. That's not to say that if you don't, you won't sell people. Not at all. You just won't sell as many people as you otherwise could have. And that's the goal, to sell the most people for the highest possible price with the highest possible margin. Step 5, trim and stack. Now that we've enumerated our potential solutions, we will have a gigantic list. Next, I look at the cost of providing each of these solutions to me, the business owner. I remove the ones that are the highest cost and lowest value first. Then I remove low-cost, low-value items. If you aren't sure what's high value, go through the value equation and ask yourself which of these things will this person, one, financially value, two, cause them to believe they'll be likely to succeed, three, make them feel like they can do it with much less effort and less sacrifice, and four, help them accomplish their goal and see the result they want in far less time. What should remain are offer items that are one, low-cost, high-value, or two, high-cost, high-value. Example. Let's say I moved in with someone and did their shopping, exercising, and cooking for them. They would probably believe they would definitely lose weight, but I am not willing to do that for any amount of money short of a gazillion dollars. The next question becomes, is there a lesser version of this experience that I can deliver at scale? Just take one step back at a time until you arrive at something that has a time commitment or cost that you are willing to live with, or obviously, massively increase your price so it becomes worth it for you, i.e. the gazillion dollars to live with someone. If there's one type of delivery vehicle to focus on, it's creating high-value one-to-many solutions. These will be the ones that typically have the biggest discrepancy between cost and value. For example, before I started my gym, I had an online training business. I created a small Excel sheet application that, after inputting all of someone's goals, automatically generated 100 meals perfectly suited to their macronutrient calorie needs. Better yet, depending on which meals they selected, it would tell them what they needed to buy at the grocery store in exact amounts and how to prepare them in bulk for the exact amounts. It took me about 100 hours to put together this entire thing. But from that point going forward, I sold truly personalized eating plans for very expensive prices, but they only took me about 15 minutes to make. High value, low cost. These types of solutions require a high, one-time cost of creation, but infinitely low additional effort thereafter. FYI, this is exactly why software becomes so valuable. That doesn't mean you don't want to ever do something in a small group or one-on-one model. After all, I do one-on-one with all my portfolio company CEOs that we help scale past 30 million plus. You just want to make sure that you save those high cost items for big value adds only. If you think you can accomplish the same value with a lower cost alternative, then do that instead. When I was running my gym, I went through this exact exercise and created bulking blueprints, an eating out system, a travel eating and workout guide, meal plans for every body weight and gender, a grocery list calculator, plateau busting meal plans for when they got stuck, fast cooking guides, partnered with a meal prep service, and did in-person nutrition orientation with every client one-on-one. Many of the one-to-many solutions require more work up front, but once created, they become valuable assets that create value in perpetuity. It's worth putting in the time to create these because they will create high-margin profit for years to come. Real talk. The meal plans I made for my gym have been used by 4,000-plus gyms now and literally hundreds of thousands of people. They are simple and easy to follow, so they've provided ample return for the week or two of dedicated time I spent making them. And if you ever have the desire to build a repeatable business model, something that scales, these assets you create will become the bedrock. This book, for example, is a high-value asset that is low-cost overall. Sure, it cost me a lot up front, but each additional book I sell after my first one cost me very little and provides tremendous value. The final high-value deliverable. Let's sum this up before we configure our final high-value deliverable. Step 1. We figured out our prospective client's dream outcome. Step 2, we listed out all the obstacles they're likely to encounter on the way, aka our opportunities for value creation. Step 3, we listed out all those obstacles as solutions. Step 4, we figured out all the different ways we could deliver those solutions. Step 5A, we trimmed those ways down to only the things that were the highest value and lowest cost to us. All we have to do now is Step 5B, put all the bundles together into the ultimate high-value deliverable. So let's go back to the example. We see our prospect struggled with the following. Buying food. How anyone can buy food fast, easy, cheaply, which we turn into foolproof bargain grocery system that'll save hundreds of dollars per month on your food and take less time than your current shopping routine. $1,000 of value for the money it'll save you from this point on in your life. A. One-on-one nutrition orientation while I explain how to use. B. Recorded grocery store. C. Do-it-yourself grocery calculator. D. Each plan comes with its own list for the week. E. Bargain grocery shopping training. F. Grocery buddy system. G. Pre-made Instacart grocery carts for delivery. H. And a check-in via text weekly. Cooking. To solve this problem, ready in 5-minute busy parent cooking guide. How anyone can eat healthy even if they have no time. $600 value from getting 200 hours per year back. That's 4 weeks of work. A. One-on-one nutrition orientation where I explain how to use. B. Meal prep instructions. C. Do-it-yourself meal prep calculator. D. Each plan comes with its own meal prep instructions for the week. E. Meal prep buddy system. F. Healthy snacks in under 5 minutes guide. G. A weekly post they can tag me in for feedback. To solve the eating problem. Personalized lick your fingers good meal plan. So good it'll be easier to follow than eating what you used to cheat with and cost less. $500 value. A. One-on-one nutrition orientation where I explain how to use. B. Personalized meal plan. C. 5-minute morning shake guide. D. 5-minute budget lunches. E. 5-minute budget dinners. F. Family-sized meals. G. A daily picture of their meals. H. One-on-one feedback meeting to make adjustments to their plan, which FYI was an upsell. Exercise problem. Fat-burning workouts proven to burn more fat than doing it alone. Adjusted to your needs so you never go too fast, plateau, or risk injury. $699 value. To solve the traveling problem. The ultimate tone up while you travel eating and workout blueprint for getting amazing workouts in with no equipment so you don't feel guilty enjoying yourself. $199 value. How to actually stick with it. The never fall off accountability system. The unbeatable system that works without your permission. It's even gotten people who hate coming to the gym to look forward to showing up. $1,000 value. How to be social. The live it up while slimming down eating out system that will give you the freedom to eat out and live life without feeling like the odd man out. $349 value. Total value. $4,351, all for only $599. Author note, most of our facilities now sell this bundle for longer periods of time, for $2,400 to $5,200. Wild. As we got better at creating and monetizing value, the prices and profit of our facilities skyrocketed. Once you start this value creation process, each additional piece of value you create stacks up over time. This is why it's important to begin. Can you see how much more valuable this is than a gym membership? The bundle does three core things. One, it solves all the perceived problems, not just some. Two, gives you the conviction that what you're selling is one of a kind. Very important. Three, makes it impossible to compare or confuse your business or offering with the one down the street. Woo! We finally have what we are going to deliver in all its glory. That being said, it's unlikely we would present it this way. Depending on whether we sell one-on-one or one-to-many, we would present this differently. I will address how to present each of these bundled items in the bonus section, which is the next section. Summary points. We went through this entire process to accomplish one objective, to create a valuable offer that is differentiated and unable to be compared to anything else in the marketplace. We are selling something unique. As such, we are no longer bound by the normal pricing forces of commoditization. Prospects will now only make a value-based rather than a price-based decision on how they should buy from us. Hurrah! Now that we have our core offer, the next session will be dedicated to enhancing it. We will employ a combination of psychological levers, bonuses, urgency, scarcity, guarantees, and naming. Free gift number 6, bonus tutorial, offer creation part 2. If you want to walk through this profit maximizing, trimming, and stacking process with me live, go to acquisition.com/training/offers. I also have some free checklists for you that you can use. As always, it's absolutely free. Section 4, enhancing your offer. Scarcity, urgency, bonuses, guarantees, and naming. But wait, there's more. If you order today, every infomercial in the 90s. May 2019, Arnold Schwarzenegger's home, after school All-Stars fundraiser. The line of cars outside Arnold's house was around the corner, and we were in one of them. We were sitting in our Uber when a security guard with an earpiece, black suit, and black sunglasses knocked on the driver's window. It was like straight out of a movie. The driver rolled down the window. Name? Alex and Layla Hormozy. He scanned the list on his clipboard, nodded, then checked off our names. "Great," he said. His demeanor transformed from stern to inviting. "Welcome to the fundraiser. Stay in this line. You'll make a left, then security will escort you the rest of the way." The security guard talked into his walkie-talkie to the next post down the road, signaling our car was approved. Pulling in front of the estate was like entering a Bond movie. Lamborghinis, Bugattis, Ferraris, and brands of cars that are too expensive to even speak of. Old guys with young, scantily clad girls. A-list actors, celebrities with millions of followers who were recording themselves as they arrived, talking to their iPhones to their audiences. And us. The fundraiser was $25,000 per ticket to attend, with an invite list of only 100. There was a red carpet and all. Every year, the fundraiser culminated in a big auction for memorabilia and items some of the business owners in the audience gave away for charity. We walked around looking at the entertainment stations purposely devised to get donors in the giving mood. We saw $10,000 scotches, $500 cigars, pre-released items from major brands that wouldn't be available to the public until months later. And of course, the most expensive cuisine you could imagine. Layla and I were just soaking it all in. It was a wonderful night. We definitely felt like cool kids. Ben, the CEO of the charity, saw us looking lost and walked over. He took me by the arm and introduced me to some of the other donors. These were all men who were older than me, donating $100,000 and up without a second thought. The man he introduced me to was one of the charity's biggest donors. He had built an ultra-high-end jewelry and watch business. I'm talking $100,000, $500,000, $2 million-plus rare status symbols that people buy, only so other 0.001%ers know they belong. He had donated upwards of $700,000 in merchandise as prizes for the fundraiser that evening. "Alex and Layla, meet George," Ben said. "He's been very generous with his time and money to the cause. George, this is Alex and Layla. They're donating $1 million tonight to After School All-Stars. I figured you are both good people and wanted to connect you two." "Nice to meet you," George said, with calm and weathered eyes. He was in his late 60s, tall and sturdily built. You could hear his Eastern Bloc origins in his accent. He sounded like a man who had fought tooth and nail to be here, but had softened his demeanor for gatherings such as these. But the tiger with the teeth and claws remained under the surface, ready to be called upon at a moment's notice. I felt like I understood this guy. Ben broke the ice. "So, George was the one who got me to raise the price from $15,000 per ticket to $25,000. We had more demand than ever this year, but I took his advice. I cut the amount of tickets we sold and raised the prices." "That's right," George said, content that his sage business advice had been followed. "When demand increases, cut supply." He perked up slightly because we started talking about money. This man had built his business from nothing and had found ways to sell things for extraordinary profits by understanding human psychology. I had long learned about supply and demand, but this guy was using its psychological underpinnings to fuel a fundraising. You could take the tiger out of the jungle, but not the jungle out of the tiger. People want what they can't have. People want what other people want. People want things only a select few have access to. He was dead right. They had raised an extra $1 million that night before the event had even started by cutting the supply of tickets and raising the prices. On top of that, all the people were more qualified than ever to be big donors. The night ended being up the most successful night in the charity's history, raising nearly $5.4 million from only 100 people. That's $5,400 a head. Each of the items was auctioned off as a one-of-a-kind item, and if you missed it, you'd never have a chance to buy it again. Arnold even threw in some bonuses when two people would get high enough in the bidding, allowing the charity to get both donations. It was a masterful display of human psychology at work in a setting where people knowingly overpaid for products. The products remained unchanged, yet within this setting, an item that wouldn't sell at a different venue for $10,000 sold for $100,000. That's how powerful scarcity, urgency, and bonuses are. And breaking down how to use them to further increase demand for your offer without changing your offer is the purpose of this section. Author note: other persuasion powers at play. Scarcity, urgency, bonuses, and guarantees were not the only persuasion tools being employed to get egregious prices at the fundraiser. They also used commitment and consistency, status, peer pressure, goodwill, celebrity endorsements, competition, etc. However, scarcity, urgency, bonuses, and guarantees are the four that I'll be breaking down in this book, as I believe they're the ones that belong with the offer and less with the actual selling, which I will talk about more in depth in Acquisition Volume 4, $100 Million Sales. The Delicate Dance of Desire. Pictured in the book is the supply and demand curve. Fundamentally, all marketing exists to influence the supply and demand curve. We artificially increase the demand for our products and services through some sort of persuasive communication. When we increase the demand, we can sell more units. When we decrease the supply, we can sell those units for more money. The perfect profit combination is lots of demand and very little supply, or perceived supply. The process of enhancing your offer is designed to do both of these things: increase demand and decrease perceived supply, so you can sell the same products for more money than you otherwise could and in higher volumes than you otherwise would over a long enough time horizon. the new supply-demand curve. Pictured in the book is the curve that has been shifted to the right by bonuses, scarcity, urgency, guarantees, and naming, so that you can get more units sold at higher prices. Author note, this assumes a regular business who is not trying to gain mass market penetration for some other strategic advantage. Desire comes from not getting what you want. In fact, I heard this quote that I love from Naval Ravikant. Desire is a contract you make with yourself to be unhappy until you get what you want. It follows, therefore, that we only want things we do not have. As soon as we have them, our desire for them disappears. Therefore, if we seek to increase the demand or desire, we must decrease or delay satisfying the desires of our prospect. We must sell fewer units than we otherwise can. Let that sit with you for a second. Consider this example. We promote some two-day workshop that is upcoming. First, we whisper that it's coming. Then we tease it with some benefits. Then we shout that it's launching in a week. Then, when we launch this amazing workshop, we have two supply-demand scenarios. Scenario one, we sell 10 units at $500 each. Sell the entire pyramid of demand at a price that everyone says yes to. Scenario two, we sell two one-day workshops, one-on-one, for $5,000 each. We skim the top of that pyramid with 80% of people not being able to purchase or choosing not to. It's worth noting that each of these prospects have different buying thresholds. In my experience, demand for services is nonlinear. Instead, I found demand to be fractal, aka 80-20. In other words, one-fifth of prospects are willing to pay five times the price or more. In the example, I might have 10 people willing to pay $500, but two of them willing to pay $5,000. So it would make more, have lower costs, aka more profits, provide more value, and increase the demand in the remaining prospect base by selling fewer units. Think about how exclusive scenario one versus scenario two would feel. Think about all the people who would want to purchase but would not be able to. Would this increase or decrease their desire? It would increase it, of course. On top of that, if people see that others who are able to get in are loving it, it would further increase their desire. And the next time, they would act with more urgency and be willing to pay more for the same thing than they originally did. So now, in the aftermath of our second scenario, we would still have 8 people who have unsatisfied desire. This increases their desire further. And to boot, we now have new prospects who weren't in the original pool who now want what we have. The next time we promote scenario two, we then open up 3 spots at the same price and sell them all, still leaving some prospects with pent-up demand. This is a continuous theme. Conversely, if we were to promote scenario one again, the $500 price point, we would probably sell fewer slots the second time around. Why? We have no pent-up demand. All desire has been fulfilled. When you, quote, pull the trigger too early, each successive instance we promote, we sell even fewer. Eventually, we run out of sufficient demand to even make a single sale. This is the sad state many businesses find themselves in, always trying to generate more demand to make another quick sale. Hormozy Law. The longer you delay the ask, the bigger the ask you can make. The longer the runway, the bigger the plane that can take off. We must endeavor to keep our supply and satisfaction of desire under the demand that we are able to generate. This maximizes profits and keeps desire ravenous in our customer base. This is the real key to never going hungry. Summary points. The reason I titled this subsection, Delicate Dance of Desire, is that supply and demand are inversely correlated, in theory. If you satisfy zero desire, aka provide zero supply, you will not make money, and eventually people will leave feeling rejected. Note, it takes much longer than you think. Conversely, if you satisfy all the demand, you will kill your golden goose and not know where your next meal will come from. Mastering supply and demand comes from the elegant dance between the two. If you sleep with your significant other every day, they have less desire than if you haven't slept with them for a week. We want the ravenous prospect, not merely the aroused. Therefore, understanding the interplay between these variables is key to enhancing the offer and the amount of profits you will make over time. Up to this point, we have covered all the things inside of your offer that can make it immune to price comparison and transform regular services and products into things that people will find a way to pay for. It would follow that the next variable that can make your offer more desirable is how it is presented. In other words, the outside variables that position the product in your prospect's mind. These forces are often more powerful than your core offer. In the next section, Enhancing Your Offer, I will show you how I, 1, use scarcity to decrease supply to raise prices and indirectly increase demand through perceived exclusiveness. 2, use urgency to increase demand by decreasing the action threshold of a prospect. 3, use bonuses to increase demand and increase perceived exclusivity. 4, use guarantees to increase demand by reversing risk. 5, use names to re-stimulate demand and expand awareness of my offer to my target audience. I will define each, then give you examples on how to use them. We will use all of these variables to enhance our offer and shift the demand curve in our favor, leaving our customers always wanting for more. We will start by tactically stimulating fear of missing out, aka FOMO, through scarcity. Chapter 11, Enhancing the Offer, Scarcity, Sold Out. Scarcity is one of the most powerful and least understood forces to unlock unlimited pricing power. If you want to learn how to sell air for millions of dollars, then pay attention. The reason for an authority, like a doctor, a celebrity, like Oprah, or a celebrity authority, like Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil, can charge egregious rates is because of implied demand. People assume that there's a lot of demand for their time and therefore not a big supply of it. As a result, it must be expensive. That being said, it's hard for most businesses to understand what it's really like to have an uneven supply-demand curve until you've experienced it. I'm going to try and walk you through what it felt like for me for the first time I experienced it in order to give you a taste of the power. When I got in this world of acquisition, I saw mentors of mine selling days of time for $50,000 plus. My mind was blown for two reasons. First, because I didn't understand how they could make so much money for a single day. Second, because I didn't understand who in their right mind was buying it. Over time, I learned. I'll start with the buyer. If I have a rare problem, and I must solve this problem for my own pursuit of happiness, it will consume all of my attention. By the nature of my problem being specialized, there will be very few people who can solve it. This means there is not a large supply of solvers. In many cases, I will perceive only one possible solver, aka supply equals one. Beyond that, if solving this problem speeds up my achievement of a goal by a year or two, or immediately results in me making hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars, that solution becomes far more valuable, does it?